Are you ready for an interview with creative people too? Carolina. It's Carolina Stories.
All right, giddy up. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different. In addition to long-form interviews, I want to start experimenting with some new formats. So today, I am so excited that I was able to convince my wife, Lindsay Stetson, to join us for the first edition of Carolina Stories Book Club. And the goal is really just to have an open-ended conversation about a book that's been really impactful to us both, The Untethered Soul by Michael A. Singer. So Lindsay, welcome to Carolina Stories.
Well, thank you. It's such an honor to be here. I'm actually a little nervous. My palms are sweating.
Oh, well, I'm nervous as well. I always am doing these interviews. But to kick things off, maybe like by way of introduction, you could just share a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm from New Jersey. I grew up with four siblings and moved to New York, Hoboken area for a few years. Then I was in LA for a little while. And now I've been in North Carolina with you for like 3 years. And currently I coach high school field hockey in the fall. I host a food and drink tour in downtown Wilmington. And I most recently, and more than anything else, I guess, with being on lockdown, I write a blog and a newsletter under a pseudonym.
Awesome. So you're very much a creative and an entrepreneur. The other thing I think we should mention is you are 6 months pregnant, and yes, we are expecting a baby boy in August. So that's very much been top of mind for us as
yes,
well.
Yes, although I don't know if I'm 6 months pregnant because I can't do math. Apparently, I'm not 6 months pregnant. I keep telling you that I am, but I'm 24 weeks pregnant, everybody.
Great. So let's dive into The Untethered Soul. You actually introduced this book to me very early in our relationship. So how did you stumble upon it, and where? Maybe give us a snapshot of where you were in your life when you read it.
Okay. So my friend Nina told me about this book for like 2 years. She always brought it up. She loved it. It meant a lot to her. And every time she told me about it, I don't know why, but I just had absolutely no interest in reading it. There's nothing about it that was interesting to me for some reason. And so I just was like, whatever. And then I was going through a really bad breakup, and I was just in my head all the time and just like really down. And she was just like, you have to read this book now. Like, I'm not even giving you the option, like, go get this book. And so I finally did. And it just completely changed my life. I can remember when I first started reading it, in the beginning, it's all about like that inner voice and listening to, like, realizing that the voice in your head is not actually you. And that just like blew my mind. Like, I didn't realize that this chatter in my mind wasn't actually me. And so actually for like the entire year after I read this book, every time I was driving, whereas before I would always like have the radio on and the music, I had to be in silence because I was so fascinated by this voice in my head that I had to like be paying attention to what was going on in there. So that was the first part. And then the second part, which was like kind of halfway through the book, and I actually had to do this a lot while I was reading it, but I like had to, it was so good that I felt like it was talking to me, but I had to constantly put the book down because I was just like, this is too much to handle. And there was just like a moment where I was staying at my friend's house in Topanga. I was living with them, and they were in Mexico. So I had the whole house to myself, and Topanga is like this gorgeous, they were like so secluded from everybody. And I was like, I felt very out in nature when I was reading the book, and I was just pacing around their house after I read this passage that was just like talking about this thing that if you think about the same thing every morning when you wake up and when your head hits the pillow each night, like that thing has taken over your life. And I was like, oh my God, it's talking to me. And it was like, I knew I had to make changes in my life as soon as I read that.
Very cool. And I love this concept of the inner voice in your head as well. Michael A. Singer, the author, he talks about it's like a neurotic voice of conflicting messages. And yeah, as I've started to be more aware of that inner voice, it's nonstop. I'm constantly thinking about, oh, what if it rains tomorrow? What am I going to do? Or like, did I forget to turn the air conditioner on tonight? Oh my gosh, it's going to be too hot. I'm not going to be able to sleep. What am I going to do in the morning? And so it's just never ending. And Tim Ferriss actually was on Kara Swisher's podcast Recode Decode recently.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, especially in quarantine, he's trying to be more lenient and gentle with himself, because if he has something on his to-do list and it slips a couple of weeks, that voice will start going. Even if he's been productive, he still beats himself up. And so he likes to frame it like he tries to be a referee and step back and realize that it's not him talking. Think about it as a stranger in your head, and does it have merit? Is it making sense? And so I love that phrasing, because both of us, we also, I think, suffer from productivity shame, where we want to be so productive every day. And if we're not at our peak performance, then we kind of beat ourselves up.
Yeah, for sure.
So maybe talk more about that passage, and it hit you like a ton of bricks, where you knew you had to make changes. Like, what changes are you referring to?
So it was crazy, because the book is not I wouldn't call it a self-help book in any way. And it's not geared toward people that have issues with food and body image, but that's what I was kind of struggling with at the time. And so everything that I read felt like it was for that. And so the passage that I was talking about that I was reading that kind of made me realize that was just like, every single morning when I wake up, all I think about is getting on the scale, how many calories I'm going to eat, what exactly I'm going to eat. And then every single time I went to bed at night, it was just like a calculating everything that I ate that day, which I would do throughout the day, periodically, constantly, and then planning the following day. And I was just completely consumed by it. And reading this book, I was just like, wow, I can't live like this. And he talks about removing the thorn, and you have to remove the inner thorn. And what I was doing was I was playing with the thorn and like trying to protect myself from food and my relationship with my body. And it was kind of like, I was so terrified, because I had to, in that moment, I knew like I had to start trusting that it would be okay to not try to control all of my calories and my weight and like my working out, like conditioning and things like that. And to just like trust my body that like I can just like be a normal person and live a normal life without controlling this, and I won't become obese. I think that was the fear. Like, if I stop trying to control it, then I will be out of control and gain a million pounds, which is completely ridiculous to say that out loud, but that was the fear. And for some reason, the words were written, it made me realize that that's crazy. And it was only at that moment that I was able to process that and understand it. And so I knew that I had to change, but I was just really scared, because I knew also at the same time, like, I was very aware that there were going to be setbacks and I was going to trip up, but that I could never look back. I could never go back to doing what I was doing, like, for good.
Yeah, I love that thorn metaphor that he uses, because it's like the more you play with it, the more irritated it becomes, right? And so you try to wall off this area of your body that has the thorn and just protect yourself, but it closes you off from experiencing life in its fullest form.
That's right. I would plan my entire schedule around my food intake. And so I rarely like attended social events, and I was very closed off from people, and I kind of like everything, like I could not do anything in the spur of the moment. In fact, my friend Nina, who introduced me to the book, she was so spontaneous, and she's just like the opposite of me in so many ways. And sometimes she would just like show up at my place unannounced and just like want to hang out. And I'm just like, I cannot do this with you. Like, this is not a part of my plan today. And it was all part of the food. It was just like, if she was there and I had been planning to eat at that time, it's like, well, then it was all messed up. Or if she would just be like, do you want to go get lunch? It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. I already have my lunch planned for today. I know exactly how many calories I'm eating. We can't go to a restaurant because I don't know how many calories will be. It was insane. So yeah, it's not just like, for me, it wasn't just the food. It was my whole life was just revolving around this thing.
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot lately about being comfortable in one's own skin, right? I think Steve Kerr and Pete Carroll, who just started a podcast, they were talking about this, like the best coaches have to be comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
And the more I've had that thought in my head, the more I'm hearing it in various places. And when you have these thorns that you're not getting to the root cause of, and you're trying to protect yourself, you can't be comfortable in your own skin, and you go through life without a confidence and without exuding a love and an openness. And you appear more closed off, in my opinion.
Yeah. And that's like the saddest thing. Like when you say it like that, that's so sad to me. And I think that kind of realizing that is the first step. Like just realizing that you can't live that way, even though I had no idea how I was going to change, it was really, and that's why it was also really exciting, is because I knew that I could, I just didn't have the tools yet.
There's one passage from the book that kind of hits me in regards to what we're talking about. It said, the only thing you really want from life is to feel enthusiasm, joy, and love. And when you frame it like that, it's just so clear. And I mean, it becomes a choice. It's like, okay, I could try to protect myself. I could try to present myself in the best light, or I can choose enthusiasm, joy, and love and not close myself off from positive energy. And I think a lot about in relation to this podcast. I mean, so I started it very much as an experiment. I'm inspired from you in many ways, because you have all your creative and entrepreneurial endeavors. And I said, okay, I'm just gonna go for this. I've been thinking about it a lot. And so I wanna launch it and see where it takes me. But being vulnerable and transparent is hard. And I mean, you get to see it firsthand on a day-to-day basis. I'm so concerned with how I'm going to come off. Am I going to be articulate? Am I going to ask good questions? Am I going to portray the guest in the best light? And it's funny, I spent so much time editing these in fear of presenting myself in the best light. And honestly, I think it may be holding me back from having a better podcast. And Brian Koppelman talked about this. He was on Tim Ferriss's show, which we both listened to, and he was talking about trying to reduce the variance between his private life and his public life. And I think that's so brilliant, but it takes being comfortable in your own skin in order to get there.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because I'm so eager for that connection with people now that I'm seeing it more, but I'm seeing it more. Like, I feel like so many people that I look up to, like a Brian Koppelman, and like I just listened to the Sage Steele was on the Finding Mastery podcast, and she talked about the same thing. And I feel like the more people are able to feel like they can be vulnerable and transparent and talk about the things that they're struggling with, the more you realize that other people are going through the same thing, and that feels good. Like, it feels safe that you can talk about these things and realize that you're not alone, and then it makes you feel stronger that you can do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. And then the other, transitioning a little bit, but the other thing that Michael A. Singer talks a lot about is energy. And he says we have a phenomenal amount of energy inside of us, and it's always available. And when we're filled with this, we feel like we can take on the world. You have to be open, though, in order to feel that energy reserve. And if you close yourself off trying to protect these thorns, you're not going to feel that.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I was thinking about that. I forgot about that. But it makes me think about when you're so pumped about something, like when you're working on something, and of course, I'm going to bring this back to food, but like when I'm really excited about a project I'm working on, I might like forget to eat. And like, that's like not something that's like part of my being. It's just like, I'm better now. This was a long time ago that I read this book. So I'm much better now. But if I am like filled with energy without drinking any coffee, and it's just like, because I'm so excited about something, he makes the point that like, that energy is always there at your disposal. It's just whether you want it or not. And so I just think it's so cool to think like, it doesn't have to be something that just happens. It could be something that you create.
100%. I love it. And the other analogy he uses, or example he uses in that line of thought, is when you get in a new relationship and you're wildly in love, you feel like you have so much energy. You wake up with a smile on your face. You may not even get a lot of sleep, and you're just bouncing through life, exuberant.
Right.
And I think that's a cool visual to try to exemplify day in and day out. But one of the things we talk a lot about is trying to be more observant, like what are the things in life that give us energy, and then what are the things that deplete energy? And so for me, I know that group workout classes, especially if it's a class I like, that no matter how I walk in that room, when I leave, I'm always just filled with energy, and it changes the trajectory of my entire day. The other thing that gives me a lot of energy is these podcasts, mm-hmm. for example. I mean, I love the preparation phase. Like, I reread The Untethered Soul this weekend because I knew we were going to be doing that. And it was a lot of fun to revisit it, especially knowing that we were going to have this conversation. And then the conversation itself, I mean, the adrenaline's going and it's nerve-wracking, but it's really fun. It's so funny because there are no stakes. It's like, this isn't going out live. We have the ability not to press publish. We have the ability to edit it, yet it's still just nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really important piece of this, which is like, you can have something resonate you, and you can have this moment of like, wow, that's, wow, I really get that. But then you can't just be okay with that. You have to say, okay, what can I do next? And the next thing is to become aware of the things that give you energy or the things that deplete you of energy, and then take actionable steps to implement those things into your life and make your life better.
Yeah, I love it. And then the other thing this whole concept of energy makes me think about is whenever we argue or we get in a fight, in my opinion, it always stems from a place of insecurity. Like, one of us will say something that will hit the other's thorns, mm-hmm. And our instinct is to close up. And so we're not able to be open, and then it causes this cascade of negative emotions or a negative spiral. And so I love the way he frames it in the book. It's like, okay, you be observant of your energy shifting, and then just choose not to close. Yeah. Like, relax and breathe. And he says, fall behind the energy. I think we've both been trying to do this more.
You did a really good job the other night, but you had just been reading the book, so it was fresh in your mind.
Yeah. But I've also been noticing you do it a lot too, and it also reminds me of the quote that we actually included in our wedding ceremony. So I'll read it now. It's, the only thing you have to know is that opening allows energy in and closing blocks it out. Now you have to decide whether or not you want this energy. How high do you want to get? How much love do you want to feel? How much enthusiasm do you want to have for the things you do? If enjoying a full life means experiencing high energy, love, and enthusiasm all the time, then don't ever close. And it just, I love it. It just frames it like it's a simple choice. Mm-hmm. And it really is, but it doesn't feel like that in the moment.
Yeah, I remember the piece of that I love so much is about, like, how high do you want to feel? And I will never forget when you came to visit me in LA and we spent the day together down in Long Beach, and then we were in Santa Monica, and I was just, I mean, obviously cloud nine, it was very early on, but like, I was so high and I kept on telling you, I feel like I'm on drugs. Because I was on this drug with you, like in our love or whatever it was, like it just felt so good. And it was just like this pure energy.
Absolutely. And the other reason I'm so thankful for this book is it's so fortunate that we met at a time where we were both, one, single, but two, open and ready for a relationship. Because I think we both were simultaneously, without even knowing each other, kind of working on ourselves in various ways. And then so when we finally did meet, we were open to it.
Yeah. It's so funny because after I read this book, of course, then I'm like, everybody needs to read this book. And so I gifted it to three women in my life, and I'm pretty sure none of them have read it. And then right after that, I met you. And I remember we were in Mexico, and I don't know how it came up, but you asked me about, I don't know, books. And I told you about this amazing book that I just read. And we had a whole conversation about it. And you were genuinely so curious and interested about it. And then you went home and you read it and we talked about it. And it was really cool that I could share in that with you, because it is so true. Like, with books, you can't force people to read books that you want them to read. Like, you have to be ready and you have to be in the right place to read that book.
100%. It's not like, book recommendations are so hard, because it's not only does it have to be the right book, but it has to be the right book at the right time for that specific person.
Right.
And the other aspect you bring up is, like, one of the reasons why I am so excited about our relationship is we have the same growth mindset. We're always looking for a new book or a podcast to listen to that can change our line of thinking. And it's really cool that we could share that. And it's like, a lot of our dinner conversations revolve around, what did we learn today? What did we do? Like, what are our ambitions? What do we want to achieve?
Yeah, it's so funny because we're in such different lines of work. And when you've gotten into this routine at night where you'll listen to your podcasts in bed while you're tickling my face. And I always was glad that you would just like put on an investing podcast, because then it would just be like white noise to me. And I kind of like that. And then I would always get sucked into these podcasts because they'd be so interesting. And I was able to realize that like our worlds are so intertwined, because it's not about finance or about writing. It's about the story behind how you got to be where you are. And we are all about people's stories.
100%. So now I want to move to the concept of fear. I think Michael Eisner said that fear is the cause of every single problem. Prejudices, anger, jealousy, possessiveness. Or we fear we're not good enough or we'll fail. And Sarah Blakely, and you actually pointed this podcast out to me yesterday, Sarah Blakely and Jesse Itzler were on Lewis Howes' podcast. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about so many people don't start the company because they're fear of failure, which ultimately stems from a fear of embarrassment. Mm. Or we talked about like these thorns, and our arguments stem from insecurities. And for me, that really stems from a fear that your feelings about me may change at some point. But it's like you have to live in the moment, because if you're fearful, you're actually going to create the outcome that you don't want.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite quotes from the book is, he says, "Getting involved in the darkness does not dispel darkness, it feeds it." And I think this one is the hardest one for me, because I struggle with this one a lot, especially in when I'm in like arguments with my family. I feel like I always revert back to like the person that I used to be when I'm around them. And I really struggle with being able to be open and let go and try to stay out of the darkness.
Yeah, it's hard. And as I think about this whole pregnancy journey and becoming parents, I think a lot about fear, because it's so interesting. I didn't really envision what it would feel like for my partner to be pregnant, but it's like, okay, so you got pregnant, and I thought that would be great. It's like, okay, now we have 9 months to prepare to be parents and care for a infant. Mm. But at every stage, there's just so much fear and anxiety. It's like, okay, you hear how common miscarriages are in the first 10 weeks or whatever it is. And then you have the genetic testing and the anatomy testing, which creates all sorts of fear and anxiety. But it's kind of like worrying whether it's going to rain tomorrow. Like, your thoughts aren't going to change the outcome. And right. So you're just creating this this constant state of pain for yourself, rather than just going through life open and enjoying the moment. And so it's something I'm trying to get better at, so that, I mean, otherwise for the next 40 years, I'm just going to be in a constant state of anxiety.
Right.
That anxiety would also create a style of parenting that I don't want. Like, I don't want to be one of those helicopter parents, but it's hard. It's like your toddler is hanging off walls, and there's always something where he or she could get hurt. And so it's, the instinct is to protect at all costs, but then you end up boxing them in their own life, in their own journey.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking a lot about how we're going to parent and how we're going to handle these situations. And I think that it's just going to be such a learning process the whole way through, and we're not going to be prepared when he comes, and that's okay. But I think that one of the things that's like going to be the biggest part of this is just how we act. And so some of that stuff is like trying to make some of those changes now, because I think we have some really great habits, but like, for instance, to come back to food again, I think that the one piece of my journey that is like that I still eat too fast, and I think that we both do. And so I don't want our kids to see us scarfing down our food. And so I'm like, okay, we have to start eating slower at dinner time and appreciating the meal and talking and like all that kind of stuff. But you can't just make those changes when he comes. Like, we have to live the life that we want them to see us living.
Absolutely. Like, habits are so hard to create and so hard to break. And so it's like you have to do the hard work now of changing the habits.
Yeah. Also, I think that we're both such worriers, but it's good, because like when you're really worried about something, I feel like I try to take the lighter side and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But like that worry stems from fear. And it's like, I don't want our son to go through life in a constant state of worry.
Right.
And so that's another example where he's going to emulate us and our approach to the world. And so the more we can try to be even keeled and balanced, the better off it's going to be for everybody. I also want to, like, so Michael A. Singer, he talks about change a lot and how it's inevitable. And it can either be viewed as exciting or frightening, but regardless, we all must face the fact that change is the very nature of life. Getting comfortable with change, I think, is an incredible skill to create. It's like you can't control things at every step. It kind of goes to the, like, trying to control the weather tomorrow. And so Josh Waitzkin, he was a chess master, and the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer was actually based off his early childhood life. He does something with his son that I just love. If whenever it's raining, he says, look at the beautiful rainy day outside. Like, let's go play, or like, let's go enjoy the beautiful rainy day. And it's teaching his son to control what he can control and be the internal locus of control rather than be reliant on external factors. And so it's something that I want to do with our son as well.
Yeah, you sent me that article about that? And I just thought that was so incredible, because I think that there are some things that we do and how we respond to things that are just so ingrained in us. It's like, it's raining outside, it's dark outside, it's cold outside, and we just want to say, oh, such a crappy day today. But that's just, it's just not true. And it doesn't have to be viewed that way. And it's so cool to think that this little thing, this little child, has no idea if that's good or awesome, you know? And we can make all of those things exciting and new and fun, you know? We can, it's all about your perspective.
And it's like adapting to whatever environment you're in, being okay with ambiguity, being able to make decisions with imperfect information. Like, that's the nature of investing. And it's actually something I wasn't prepared for when I graduated from college, because the school system taught me there's a right answer. And I got very good at taking tests, but I wasn't great at making decisions based on probability. And it was a change I needed to make. And so I don't know how to do that necessarily, but like board games, for instance, is one example. And just being cognizant of it as our son grows up, I think, will help.
Yeah. You just made me think. It's really cool with this book, because I've read it, I guess I've read it 3 or 4 times now. And every time I read it, I get something, like there's a different takeaway. And it's just so interesting, like how we can apply this to so many different aspects of our life. And it's really cool to now be reading it through like a parental lens.
100%. And then the other thing that I've been thinking about, it kind of goes in the line of thought of being comfortable in your own skin, but Anthony Pompolino on his podcast, he talked about really cultivating a thick skin. Like, his parents did a good job of that when he was growing up, and he thinks it's an invaluable skill set or trait that he has now. And I love it. It's like, you can't have thorns, or you need to remove the thorns in order to have the thick skin, and not get swayed by whatever other people think. I mean, it kind of goes to the inner scorecard mentality that Buffett talks about. Like, judge yourself on what you want to judge yourself on, and not what other people are.
Yeah, this brings up a whole other conversation, because we've been watching the Michael Jordan documentary, and I think, you know, I grew up with a thick skin for sure, and I had really tough coaches, and my parents instilled in me definitely that you have to work and earn everything that you get. You know, nothing's going to be handed to you, and I really appreciate that they instilled that in me. But I think about some horrible experiences I had as an athlete, and the Michael Jordan documentary was really making me think about it. And it's just like, he was inspired, motivated by all this negative reinforcement, and that he wanted to prove everybody wrong, which I can relate to. And it's like, I don't want my son to feel like he has to prove the world wrong to succeed. You know, I want him to feel encouraged and supported and nurtured, but I also don't want him to be, you know, a softie. So I struggle with how to approach that, like how to approach that in a balanced way where he's got a thick skin, but he feels supported and loved.
Mm-hmm. It's a hard question, and I think something we're just going to have to navigate as we go.
As with many things.
Yeah, absolutely. So what else did you take away from the book? Any other topics that you want to hit?
I mean, there's so much. Here's another quote that I have written down. When a problem is disturbing you, don't ask, what should I do about it? Ask, what part of me is disturbed by this? And I feel like there's so many moments throughout this book that kind of just made me shift my perspective on things and just think about things in a completely new and different way and a kinder way. And so I think that, like, overall, there's this piece of self-talk that we do, and I beat myself up all the time, sometimes in my head, sometimes verbally, and will curse at myself and call myself, you know, an idiot. And I realize that it doesn't do me any good to do that. It feels like that's what I should be doing because I need to punish myself, but it doesn't actually have any good results. And I think that you've helped me a lot with this, where you started making me feel like I shouldn't beat myself up about things. And you were always so kind in the way that you would respond to, like, my negativity. And I felt like that allowed me to start talking to myself in a more positive way. And once I was able to start doing that, which was really hard, I started to see better results. Like, the kinder that I am to myself, the more I'm, like, put on a kind of a positivity track to be inspired and motivated and do better, as opposed to this negative reinforcement to push myself. Like, for me, that doesn't work anymore. It did for a short time, but I think in the long run, you can't be fueled by negativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you mentioned you're writing a pseudonymous blog right now. Like, what is fueling you to create that world, especially since you can't share it with friends and family and get that reinforcement or encouragement from people you love and care about?
Yeah, it's tough, but I think that I've always felt held back in my writing, and that I was never able to be really truthful and honest and, like, say the things that I really want to say, because there's a couple times in the past where I've kind of done that, and I've gotten a lot of heat for it, and I felt really guilty about it, and I was always kind of scared to press publish because I didn't know what the backlash was going to be. And now that I'm writing under a pseudonym, I don't have that fear, and it's the most freeing thing to be able to write what I'm actually feeling, because I think about all of the times in my life where I felt alone and in dark places, and it would have been really cool if I could have went online and read something that somebody wrote that was, like, talking about the same things that I was feeling, because then I would have felt less alone. And, you know, some of them are big stuff. Some of it's, like, the eating stuff and struggling with alcohol and drugs. But some of it is just, like, the things that people don't want to say. Like, that it's not polite to say it out loud, or it's taboo, or whatever. It's, like, that's the stuff that I want to talk about. Like, I want to get real. I want to skip the surface stuff, and I just want to, like, get right to it. Like, let's say what we're really thinking. And it feels so good. So, yes, not my family and friends are not reading this, but I am able to connect with an audience on a deeper level and a really true, authentic level, and it's super gratifying.
Yeah, I love that you just shared that. And it's so interesting, because when you said sometimes it's the big stuff and food or struggles with alcohol and drugs, I felt myself being like, oh my gosh, I need to clarify for everybody that she does not struggle with alcohol and drugs in this moment.
That's fair.
But again, it goes to, like, caring what other people think.
Yeah.
I should be the judge of how I feel about our health and wellness and our journey in that arena, and not be so concerned about what other people think.
Yeah. And I think that I want to be clear that, like, I don't feel like I'm hiding behind the pseudonym, because, like I just said, I've struggled with drugs and alcohol. Like, I don't have any shame at admitting that. And so you could come right out and say these things as yourself. It's just right now that platform for me, it's easier for me to write under a pseudonym, just so that my writing, it just feels like it's easier for me to write that way. But if you wanted to be as transparent and open as you could under your real name, like, then more power to you. But, like, there's a lot of other factors. Like, you know, I coach at a high school, and I worry that writing about past struggles with whatever it might be, you know, might get interpreted the wrong way, might be a bad thing. And so it's just this piece of just complete freedom that I have by writing under the pseudonym.
Yeah. No, I think it's really cool that it's a creative outlet that gives you ultimate flexibility. How has the experience been cultivating an online community of supporters and encouragement?
Well, the timing was really great because I just took a writing course, David Perel's Rite of Passage. It was a 5-week course, like intensive. We would meet like 4 times a week online. There was about 200 people in the course. And after the course was over, I started to build a community with some of these writers. There's about 8 of us that still meet every Saturday and write. Basically, we're like an accountability group, and we give each other feedback. There's a couple guys who I email with on a regular basis, and it's incredibly supportive. And, you know, they know my pseudonym, they know my real name, and there's no fear in that because they don't actually know, they didn't know me until this point. And so it's a small group, and it's all very new, but it's incredibly supportive. And then, of course, I have you. And so it's been since February that I've started doing this, and I have so much momentum right now. And even though there's only like a handful of people that I really feel like I can reach out to, that's all I need.
Yeah, I think it's actually better for the group to be smaller, like rather than focusing on the most number of relationships, like focusing on the depth of the relationships, I've always found to be a better approach. But it's also really cool to go back to like what gives us energy. So you still have these accountability sessions on Saturdays and Sundays, and the amount of energy that you get from those, like during them, and then after you have all of the ideas floating around. One, it's like the accountability. You can't go in there unprepared. You need to be thinking about what you're going to write about. And then two, that adrenaline rush and that flood of energy gives you so much momentum coming out of it. And so it's really cool.
Yeah. When I was in the middle of the course, I told you this, but like I would wake up at 6 a.m., which I used to wake up like at like 9. And it would be like Christmas morning. I'd be so excited to get on my computer and start writing or reading or listening or just consuming fun information to like apply or working on my website or working on my newsletter. There was just like so many pieces to this that was all new. And the writing course was kind of giving me these tools. It was just like the little push that I needed to get started. And now it's just like, I think about where I was last year and where I am now. And I'm just so excited that like, I finally have the tools that I needed to start living my best life.
Yeah, for sure. And so you've been writing for almost 10 years now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what was it about this specific course, Rite of Passage, that really resonated with you and gave you this momentum coming out of it?
Actually, like creating a website, because I had a website, but it was really crappy and I didn't really know what I was doing. So I was given the tools to create a website and make it look good. And so that gives you like a little bit of a confidence then, like, okay, I have a website now that looks good. And then creating a newsletter, I had no idea how to do that. I didn't even know really what a newsletter was. So now I've got these things that are like online, they're tangible things. And then I wasn't expecting actually for my writing to get better. I was just expecting to be given these tools to help me get my writing out there. But each week we'd be given writing prompts to get us started on an essay. And I never approached writing with prompts, which seems now like obviously that's what you should do. He would ask us questions like, what's your most frequently asked question? Like, what do people ask you all the time? And so you start thinking like, what do people ask me all the time? And you approach your essays with this, like, what question can I answer? And then another piece that was really, that really stood out to me was this thing that David and somebody else created called POP writing, P-O-P. And it stands for personal, observational, and playful. And you know, if you can have all three of those pieces in your writing, then you can write something really great. And I was listening to what he was talking about with these different pieces, and I realized, wow, my stuff is very personal and pretty playful. And there's absolutely no observation. Like, I wasn't bringing that piece in at all. And so having prompts and bringing more of an observational piece into my writing. And then he also gave us like a note-taking system, which kind of changed the game changer, where you, every time I listen to a book or read a book or listen to a podcast, I have to take notes and not just be like, oh, that was a good podcast I listened to. Like somebody says something and I'm like, oh yeah, I heard, you know what, somebody was talking about that. And I just sound like a total idiot because I'm like, I can't remember anything. I have the worst memory in the world. And so now like I write everything down and I have this note-taking system where I can pull these pieces into my writing. So that's my observational piece where I'm actually supporting my argument. And so now every time I write something, I ask myself, who is my audience? What are they going to get out of this? Why do they want to read this? Like, I'm not just writing a diary like I used to do. Like, I used to just be like, here's what happened today. And it was so boring and I'm embarrassed now. And so now I just feel like I have such a better approach, like at outlining like all of these pieces that I just like wasn't doing before.
Yeah, I love it. And I think that's the whole notion of growth, right? Like, we want to be embarrassed about the work we put out into the world last year or the year before. And it's like, I think about that with investing. Like, I want to be embarrassed with the investing ideas I have because I want to get better. I want to improve and I want to be on a growth path.
I like that.
Let's talk about just podcasting in general. You've been seeing me go through this process. You see how much anxiety I get before an interview. Like, what do you think I could do to get better?
Well, I was reading, what was it?
Ira Glass commencement speech.
I was reading the at Columbia, and he had a advice for podcasters, and he just said to put yourself in it more, put you in it. Just, and he kept repeating himself, put yourself in it. And he said, you know, if you're not funny, don't try to be funny. But if you are funny, be funny. And I think that that's the piece that I've been wanting to see more from you is that. I think that you're doing such a great job in your preparation and your questions and your follow-up questions, but it's less of an engagement, like less of a conversation. And I think that because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I enjoy when the person interviewing gives their side and lets us in to see a little bit more of their life. And right now I know you so well, but I feel like people listening aren't really getting to know you at the same time that they're getting to know the guest.
Yeah, it's that vulnerability piece, right? It's hard to put yourself out there and it's hard to be judged. And so I like to stay in the background. But the whole goal for this podcast is developing skill sets that can benefit me in all areas of my life. So become a better communicator, like ask better questions, become a better storyteller. And the only way I'm actually going to achieve that is by inserting myself more in the conversation. And like, I also think that I have the arc of the questioning scripted in a sense, and I want to get better at just going down rabbit holes. And it's like, okay, like I do all the preparation, but if we don't get to half of it, that's totally fine. Being willing to dance with the guest, if you will, or just go down paths that I wasn't expecting to go down, where right now, like that just is fear-inducing thinking about it.
Yeah, I also was just thinking about an interview that I listened to with Tyler Cowen, and he talked about like getting the weird out of them and being weird with your guests. Like, people being weird is really just them being their like true authentic self. And so the more vulnerable you can be, the more they'll be willing to go there with you. And then Debbie Millman, who does Design Matters, she said that she likes to, her like first question is always something that maybe the guest wouldn't expect her to know, or maybe it'll make them feel like, oh, she really did her homework. And so then they're more willing to kind of right from the out the gate, like, okay, here we go. Like, instead of just, you know, asking the same questions that they're used to being asked, or keeping it kind of on that like surface level that we were talking about.
Yeah, they just, because then it allows them to launch into their script and they kind of zone out and say the same thing that they've said every time. But it's sometimes hard because some of the questions that I wouldn't have expected people to get asked a lot, they'll say, oh, I get that a lot. I'm like, really? I thought that was a good one that many people wouldn't have asked you.
Right. But I also think about all the different styles that podcasters have. And we always talk about Tim Ferriss. You know, his first podcast was like really bad, right?
Yeah, it was with Kevin Rose, who also loved The Untethered Soul.
Oh, cool.
And Tim Ferriss was, I think he was drinking during it.
and he got drunk.
Like, yeah, like, and I could totally relate, right? Because right. you're nervous. And right. so, and your like nervous tick is to just reach for the, I forget whether it was a glass of wine or tequila or whatever it was. Right. But like midway through, he's like slurring his words. yeah. But it goes back to being embarrassed about the work we put out into the world
right.
last year. Like the only way he's gotten so good and he's gotten better is because he had those early fails and he was willing to be vulnerable and on display and be ridiculed.
Yeah. And I think that we always talk about this, but it's hard to implement it. It's like, you got to love the process. And I have never done that before. Like I always hate the process. And then in hindsight, talk about how great it was. And it's like, this is your fifth podcast. You're not going to be a professional at this for a long time. And each time you do it, you get better. And to watch how you get better each time, like that's the cool thing. Like that's the thing to get excited about, not to be like, oh, I didn't do as well as I wanted to, or I made these mistakes or whatever it may be. Like, yeah, of course you did. You're going to.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, to be completely transparent, it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast yeah. because I want to work on being a better communicator rather than being so scripted. And so thank you for all your support and encouragement and for coming on to kind of help me in this journey and this process of improvement.
You're welcome. I'm very proud of you.
great. Well, anything else you want to cover on the Untethered Soul, on life, on quarantine before we wrap up?
Are you going to ask me the same question you ask everybody else?
Sure. So, Lindsay Stetson, what is your favorite restaurant in Wilmington, North Carolina?
Obviously, Ceviche's number one, and I would like to call it the number one bartender, Amanda. It's like a Panamanian cuisine, and the food is like really fresh, local, and it's also walking distance from our house, so we like to walk there. Not anymore, but as soon as they open up, you can be sure we'll be there.
Yeah, and I actually had an idea for another podcast to bring you back on and kind of rank some of the restaurants Wilmington, because as you mentioned, you host a food and drink tour on Airbnb, and so you're very familiar with all of the options out there.
Yeah, I love restaurants.
Me too. Great. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll be back soon with some more episodes of Carolina Stories. Have a great week.